Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly afternoon to you. How's it going?
It's going well. Are you happy to be back in your traditional podcasting place?
It's easier to podcast when I'm in my own studio. I mean, it's okay doing it from the road and I've got a microphone and a hotel room. It just feels strange and odd and surreal, though, doing it in those places. So, yes, I'm happy to be back in my normal podcasting place, having had a great time in the USA and the US tour. Of course, you're not in your normal podcasting place. You're now in Edinburgh.
I am. I'm in very grey, very cloudy Edinburgh, getting ready to do my show, which starts on Wednesday. So it's a bit of a manic week. I mean, I don't know if you've thought about this, but it strikes me that the minute we turn our backs, Arsenal suddenly get very busy doing a lot of things.
A lot of stuff happened. A lot of stuff has happened in the last couple of weeks. So much so, actually, and some of it so exciting, that we had a question here from Barry O'Reilly, who's at Barry CCR, and he said, "Did Gunnerblog die because we're signing Pepe? I want good fortune for Arsenal, but I'm worried about James' health. So can we, for the record, can we confirm whether or not you are dead?"
I am dead. I am broadcasting from beyond the grave. This is, Andrew conducted a seance just to get me here on the podcast. Mm. This is the ghost. No, I'm alive and well, which, I'll be honest, has got me worried too. Something must be around the corner.
Yeah, something. But look, yeah, I mean, lots has happened. And it's really weird and strange when it happens and you're in a different time zone. Like Saturday morning, for example, I woke up and, as you do, you sort of lean over and you check your phone and you're going, "Why? What? Hang on. What? Why is it? Why have I got messages? What's happening here?" And then I saw the Ornstein thing, and I thought it was one of those things where, you know, the way someone will change their avatar to David Ornstein's avatar and, like, fire out a tweet, and people will look at it, and they won't see that it's from, like, I don't know, Wind Up Merchant 75. They, you know, they just see the picture of David Ornstein and go, "Oh, wow. Is that your doorbell?"
No. What? I can't hear anything.
Wow, what is that ringing noise I heard in my ears? Could be the jet lag. Anyway, that was my first thought, that the Pepe thing was a wind-up, but it doesn't appear to be.
No, I'm exactly the same instinct. I think I sort of clicked on the picture and was like, "Is it really you, David? Is it really you? Can it possibly be?" But I suppose, I mean, the weird thing is, we saw this story kind of broke, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago or 10 days ago at any rate. There were stories from France that four clubs had a degree of 80 million euros. And I think Arsenal came out and denied it. I think maybe even through David Ornstein, or certainly through, you know, some of the Arsenal beat journalists, it came out that, no, that's not correct. Well, maybe it was closer to being correct back then than we think.
Yeah, this was on actually July 13th. And it was according to TF1, the French outlet, who said that we had bid £80 million for, or €80 million for Nicolas Pepe. And we all kind of went, yeah, as if. I mean, that's never going to happen. And I think we were, you know, I don't think it was unreasonable to be cynical about the idea that that kind of a deal could go through. But lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, it is happening. Or appears to be, anyway. Mm. I don't want to jump the gun here because it's an exciting signing. I know he's a player that you like a lot. So, until it goes completely over the line.
Well, I like him so much that I like him so much that I think I said earlier this summer we had no chance of getting him. So I don't want to count any chickens now. But yeah, look, I would really like it to happen. I mean, do you feel confident it feels like it's a real thing, right?
It does. It does feel like it's a real thing, and it feels there's a sort of element of like too good to be trueness about it as well.
Mm.
So I don't want to like piss on anyone's chips, because the idea of him signing, I think, is really, really exciting, and particularly as he is a left-footed player who plays predominantly from the right. You know, we were looking at Wilfried Zaha, yeah, and he's a right-footed player who plays predominantly from the left in terms of their output and in terms of what they would bring to the team, in terms of dribbling, in terms of running out of opposition. Pepe certainly goal scoring is ahead of Zaha, even if there were some penalties. He had a lot of assists last season as well. So, you know, I wonder if the target has changed in some way over the last couple of weeks. Like, was Pepe the first choice and was Zaha the second? Remember what Emery said about like how they do transfers? We've got our first choice and then our second. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Did something change at Lille's end in that, you know, they were willing to accept a deal that was structured in a way which meant we could pay it over 5 years?
Well, I think that will be a huge factor in this. My gut says that Wilfried Zaha probably was the first choice because they thought they would get him for less than they're ultimately paying for Pepe. You know, I think they probably thought, well, if we can get Zaha for 50 million or something like that, then we'll do that rather than, you know, the best part of £70 million on Pepe. And I suspect that one of the things that's been a factor in this is just that we're able to pay for him in installments. I mean, I've seen fees as low as sort of 20 million euros quoted in terms of what we'll have to cough up for Lille this summer.
Yeah.
And you'd have to think that Palace would be looking for probably at least double that this year. So I do think the financial side of the deal, it does seem, you know, look at our situation with Kieran Tierney and how that's dragged on because of bringing off those payments. And it feels like that's a big part of our transfer strategy this summer, is that we don't want to commit a huge amount of cash up front. And that's probably played into doing the deal. But despite that, I mean, I think there are plenty of reasons that a lot of people will feel this is a more attractive deal than the Zaha deal. I think the age of the player is one. Mm. You know, he's a couple of years younger. The fact that he's more of a goal scorer. And I think as well, the fact that, as you say, he's a left-footed player, which in our front three is something we don't really have. We have, I mean, we finally replaced Joe Andrew. What a relief.
Replaced? You just went squiggly there when you were saying that name. Who? What were you saying?
I was Joel Campbell. Oh. We finally replaced him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really curious to, you know, if he does arrive, and if he arrives, is the plan to play him from the right-hand side? Like, is there a long-term plan to play Pepe with Hector Bellerin as a really dynamic right-sided duo? Because that would be very exciting to me. But is there, you know, the potential to play him from the left-hand side as well? Depending on who we bring in, you know, there, if we still have our eyes on Kieran Tierney or whatever. But, you know, it's it'd be a hell of a front line, wouldn't it? Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Mesut Ozil. Who else have we got? I mean, you've got Reece Nelson coming through, who could potentially play from the left side. You know, we have Mkhitaryan, we have Eddie Nketiah. But he would definitely bring something that this team does not have, and that's someone who will run at players with the ball at his feet.
That's something that we desperately need. And I joke about Joel Campbell, but actually there was a time where his partnership with Bellerin on the right-hand side was quite effective, because he was someone who would cut inside and that would create space on the overlap for Bellerin. So I'm optimistic that that is going to be a partnership we see a lot of next season. I mean, there were stories in France that, you know, when Pepe was choosing his next club, he would be thinking about the right back he would play with and how important it was for him to foster a relationship with that player. I mean, I take it with a slight pinch of salt, because I think at the end of the day in football, money talks. But as a fan, on paper, it looks like a really promising partnership. And Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe, I mean, that is mouthwatering. It makes you think, surely we are going to be playing fairly regularly with something like a front three, because we've got to maximise get the most out of those players.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe that's part of the reason why we're not necessarily after a direct Danny Welbeck replacement, in that Welbeck was a striker who could play left or right, and they seem to have earmarked Eddie Nketiah as the guy who can play as the third striker, if you like, in some of the Europa League games and League Cup games and everything else. So having this kind of a player in the team, I mean, 22 goals last season for Lille, 11 assists. You know, that was those are good numbers. Those are good numbers. They're certainly better numbers than Zaha. Of course, there was an element of him taking the penalties, but you know, you still have to score a penalty. That's good to have another guy in the team who can put them away. So yeah, I mean, look, he
won a good deal of those penalties, I think, as well, which could be very handy, especially with VAR coming in next year. If you've got someone who's a very good dribbler in the box, that might pay dividends next season.
Yeah, so, you know, when you look at things like that happening and what's already happened, which we'll talk about, of course, in a couple of minutes' time, you know, has your mood shifted, you know, 10%, 20%, 50%? Is it a radical change in how you view next season yet, or is there still work to do, in your opinion?
Look, I think there's still definitely work to do, and you can't help but look at the other end of the pitch and worry a little bit. I mean, obviously we are leaning into our strengths here. Well, I think we're more than leaning. We're diving into our strengths headlong by bringing in another attacking player. But what I would say is that, you know, as a fan, you just want to feel excited to watch your team, I think. And, you know, the signing of someone like Pepe, and I think to a certain extent this would have been true of Zaha as well, will bring that excitement. You know, I'm intrigued to see how we line up, how they get on. I'm looking forward to some of that attacking play. And I think, you know, Unai Emery was criticised for his conservatism a bit last season, but it seems the way that they're structuring the squad that surely it's going to go the other direction. I mean, we seem to be absolutely relying on our attacking firepower at this point.
Yes, yes. And look, it is one of those signings, if it goes through. And we have to say that, you know, the signing probably won't be announced until 3 seconds after we finish recording this podcast, the way things have been going.
Almost certainly.
Almost certainly. But if it does go through, it is definitely one of those signings that puts bums on seats. We all want defenders and we want our defence to improve. But in terms of what a signing can bring in terms of excitement and the way a team can play, then Pepe is a guy who would have a big impact in that regard. And the way that this team will play next season, I'm excited by the prospect of having a team which has a real focus on some, you know, it's not like we didn't focus on attacking players last season because Emery came to be very reliant on Aubameyang and Lacazette. But the outlets, the creative outlets, the guys who were getting into the final third were Kolasinac, maybe, and maybe Maitland-Niles at times. But when you've got Pepe driving out of defence or Pepe running through, you know, Aubameyang chasing balls through, you know, it is exciting to think that the conservative element to the way Emery set up his team at times last season might not be as prevalent next season. I think that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I think last year we looked like a team that was reliant on their attack without necessarily being an attacking team. And, you know, I think this year we're setting up to be a much more dynamic side. And I think maybe that's sensible. You know, as much as I'm like, well, they've got to get some defensive reinforcements, I'm also realistic about how much impact one player could have with our defensive problems. And, you know, I do think that we'll be better served by leaning into our strengths.
Okay. Well, look, I think we probably have a ton of questions about what's going to happen in the transfer market beyond Nicolas Pepe and what we might do defensively. So we'll save those for the second half of the show. So one thing that actually did happen was the arrival of Dani Ceballos from Real Madrid. This is the second podcast I'm recording today. There is an earlier Arscast special in which I talked to Colin Miller, who's the editor of Football España, about Dani Ceballos and about his career and how it's progressed from Real Betis to Real Madrid, why he's at Arsenal now and what he can bring to the team in the Premier League. So if you haven't already had a chance to listen to that, you can check it out afterwards. But it's about a half an hour show specifically on Ceballos. But your thoughts on this loan move, James? I have to say, I think when we are clearly... what's the word I'm looking for here? Choosing where to actually spend money to fill the gap in midfield with a lone player who's going to be highly motivated one way or the other to perform consistently and to perform well is a smart move.
I think so. I mean, I think it's difficult to foresee a situation where he stays at Arsenal. You know, I feel like if it's a success, he wants to go back to Madrid, and if it's not a success, do we necessarily want to keep him?
Yeah.
But that doesn't bother me, really. I mean, I think it's a really smart move because I think in the likes of, you know, Joe Willock, there are others, Guendouzi, you know, Emil Smith-Rowe, we've got young players who potentially could play in those sort of central areas of the pitch, and having Ceballos here for a year is going to do us a massive favour in that respect and give them a bit more time to develop. And maybe by the end of next season, we've got a clearer idea, you know, who might make the grade and who might not.
You're going with the th for Ceballos, are you?
I went for it and then I thought that was difficult. I don't know if I'm doing that again.
No, just go with the Ceballos. I think it's fine because, you know, we don't say Barcelona. We don't have to do all that. We can kind of anglicise
it a
little bit. But, I mean, it isn't impossible for him to stay with us. I mean, he might like it and we might really like him. And Real Madrid were, I think, willing to let him go this summer on a permanent basis for around 50 million euros, which I think is out of our price range, you know, given the circumstances we find ourselves in this summer. But perhaps if he plays well and he likes it at Arsenal and he settles in and he's, you know, he's got the trust of a coach who could well be with us next season, and he is potentially going back to a coach who he doesn't really get on with in Zidane. He's had his run-ins with Zidane in the past. So, you know, it's not impossible if he does well that we could make that deal permanent. Of course, it's a real shop window for him because, you know, if he's absolutely determined to get back to Real Madrid and show that he can make it there, then that could be his primary motivation. Or if his motivation is to win a move to Arsenal or win a move to another big European club, you know, it's all there for him this season. It does sound, you know, from what Emery says, that he's, you know, these reports that he promised him X amount of games or whatever it is. You know, I don't know that any manager can really do that, but it sounds like he's bringing him in with the idea to consider him straight away for the Arsenal first team in whatever system that Unai Emery is going to use going into this new campaign.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've not had a chance to listen yet to the other Ask Us you've recorded, but from your conversation, did you get the idea that he was sort of one of the deeper midfield players or someone who'd be more operating in the kind of Mesut Ozil number 10 role?
Yeah, well, that's what Emery said. He said he's like an 8 or a 10 is what Emery said about him. I mean, I don't suppose it would be unreasonable or impossible, rather, for him to play in a deeper midfield role. But again, it depends what way Emery is setting up his team and who he's got earmarked for certain positions. So if it's a 4-1-2-3, is he the guy who can play the one in that system? I don't know. But certainly he could play in the other two positions. Could he play as a number 10? I mean, Emery has said he's a 10. You know, he's not really a goal-scoring midfielder. He doesn't get a lot of assists. But, you know, he's been in a team where I suspect to a certain extent at Real Madrid he has been a bit marginalized in terms of what kind of role he can play. So if you're playing, you know, with Modric, with Kroos, with Isco, you know, all these other big-name players in the team, you know, maybe you are a little bit marginalized. But if you come into a team like Arsenal and you're handed some responsibility, as he was for Spain's under-21s, and he was, you know, he was very, very good in the European under-21 championships, you know, that might just bring the best out of him. Again, I guess we don't want to completely pigeonhole a guy straight away. It might take us a little bit of time to figure out what kind of a player he is and what way he fits into Emery's system. It does feel a bit, though, that the manager is slightly changing the way that this team is going to play next season. It becomes less and less likely that we're going to go with a back three on a regular basis if we've got, you know, if we've got Torreira, if we've got Guendouzi, if we've got Xhaka, if we've got Joe Willock, if we've got Ceballos, you know, Mesut Ozil, Henrik Mkhitaryan. You leave too many of those players out if you play a back three. So it seems to me that we are going to use a back four, and again, we'll come to the defense a bit later on. But if you're playing with a back four, you've got more ways of getting these guys into your first team.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, and I think, you know, that's where the Kieran Tierney interest comes from, that wanting to switch to a back four. I saw a glimpse of Ceballos in the Emirates Cup yesterday. Looks like a very tidy, very accomplished player. And, you know, I think there is part of me that sort of thinks that maybe this shows a little bit how our stock has fallen in the football world, that, you know, we're kind of loaning. Madrid see us as someone they can loan someone to rather than a direct rival or competitor. I suppose we're not in the Champions League, and that's part of that. But I just think it's a pretty shrewd bit of business all in all, and the important thing is, as we said right at the top, he's going to be motivated. And you know, last season we had Aaron Ramsey and we knew there was a very significant chance he wouldn't be with us the following year, but he performed brilliantly and was an integral part of our side. And from listening to Unai Emery, it feels like Ceballos is going to be pretty important to him too.
Yeah, and maybe it is a case of the, you know, because of the mess we made with the Aaron Ramsey situation, that in order to replace that long term, you know, we have to make a short-term decision or find a short-term fix while we uncover a long-term solution.
Yeah, absolutely. And that solution might well come from within the academy. I mean, Joe Willock is another who played yesterday against Lyon and I thought was very impressive, as he has been for much of pre-season. But bringing in a player who can kind of share that burden of expectation and share that game time with him, I think is no bad thing at all.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, it gives Willock, you know, another year to develop at the right pace, perhaps.
Exactly.
You know, so he's, you know, if and when Ceballos leaves next summer, if it doesn't become permanent, we have a Joe Willock who is 12 months further developed. He'd be, what, 20, 21 years of age at that point. Mm. Would he be that old? How old is Joe Willock now? Is he 18, 19? I'm just Googling here.
I think that sounds about right.
He is 19. So actually, he's going to be 20 in August. So, you know, he'll be 21 years of age at the start of next season. That's a decent age for a central midfield player. And if he can make the kind of progress it looks like he can make based on what he's done in preseason, with all the caveats that come with that, then in 12 months' time, we could have a real player on our hands. Because for me, watching the games over in the US, and I didn't get to see any of the game yesterday because of tiredness and jet lag and time zones, and I just, you know, my brain wasn't working. It's barely working as it is. But based on what I saw from Joe Willock in the US, you know, he's got the potential to be a first-team player at Arsenal. But at the same time, we've often seen young players maybe pushed a little too far too soon. And if Ceballos can, you know, his extra experience, I know he's only 22 himself, but if his extra bit of experience can allow Willock to develop without heaping a load of pressure on him, then that could very well be a good thing for us.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I noticed yesterday just watching the air on telly was the physical transformation in Joe Willock. I mean, he was always a big kid, but he seems to have really developed and filled out, and he's quite a powerful player even at that tender age. So I think he's a really exciting prospect, probably along with Eddie Nketiah, the most impressive of the young players in pre-season. And I think I expect him to be in that matchday squad for that Newcastle game, that first Premier League game, and I think it'll be deservedly so.
Yeah, I'm not sure he'll be in the team, but I think he'll definitely be in the squad. So the other thing we did was William Saliba, a guy who pictures have emerged, haven't they, over the last couple of days of him being an Arsenal fan since he was a kid. So obviously there was no way he was ever going to sign for Tottenham. But he's gone back on loan to to Saint-Étienne for 12 months. I think we paid not a huge amount this summer from this summer's budget, and that will kick in next season when he arrives on a permanent basis. As you said before, if they're viewing him as the kind of defensive prospect he's being talked up as being, they made sure they got this deal done. I mean, we won't know for a couple of years maybe as to whether or not all this hassle was worth it. So what do you feel about the Saliba deal this summer and the fact that we've loaned him back to his former club?
Well, look, I mean, first and foremost, it's always nice to beat Spurs to a signing. And if reports are to be believed, we did that with both Sevilla and Ceballos. So that was definitely encouraging. I think that it's a good thing that we were able to land such a well-regarded European talent. You know, I think that it shows maybe that the benefit of bringing through someone like Guendouzi and the opportunities he got last season. You know, Guendouzi and Saliba have played together in the French international setup, and apparently they had conversations about Arsenal. And, you know, I think we've made ourselves an attractive proposition for a young player because, you know, that shows you can come here and you can get game time. Not right away, of course. He's going to play a season on loan. I think that's probably for the best. I mean, he is still incredibly young, especially for a centre-half, but... Mm. You know, physically, he has a lot of the tools. So I do think it's a good move from the club and a bit of long-term thinking, which hasn't always been our best attribute, shall we say, strategically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question, though.
You sound a bit unconvinced.
No, I'm not unconvinced. I mean, look, we'll obviously all watch more Liga next season than we've ever watched before, because we'll be, you know, keeping an eye on Saliba, there'll be compilations here, there, and everywhere every time he has a good game. And I like the idea that we have a long-term strategy, that we have identified a player who could become a really good player. You know, as Raul Sanyehi said, we have to outsmart the market. And if buying an 18-year-old for 25 million euros in 2019 gives you a player who's worth 100 million or 120 million in 2023, and you've had 3-4 good seasons from him, maybe that's what it's about. You know, it's not about short-term tricks. It's about making sure that the long-term recruitment strategy of the club is correct. I was just a little bit worried by some of the comments about how difficult it is to find defenders. That was the only thing that sort of worried me a little bit about the last few days. I can't even remember the context. I think it was Unai Emery maybe talking about how difficult it was to find defenders. And I noticed that you made a comment on Twitter earlier today when Emery was asked about the state of the defence in the Emirates Cup game yesterday. He said, we were trying to sign a winger and we were trying to sign a centre-half. It looks like Pepe is the winger. You were a bit worried that maybe Saliba was the centre half.
Yeah, there's just been a couple of things from the club that have made me think that. And I wasn't in Emery's press conference, so I can't speak with authority. But I do, and it's always difficult to decipher precisely what he means. But I do wonder, and I guess part of the reason I wonder is that we just haven't really been linked with many other centre halves, have we?
No, we haven't. We haven't.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they were like, well, you know, we've got one coming in and that's what we're going to do. And it wouldn't surprise me, would concern me.
Yes, me too. We'll touch on this, I think, in a bit more depth in part two, though, because I think there's probably plenty to say about it. So what else has been going on? The Emirates Cup, we lost in the Emirates Cup to Lyon. Slightly sluggish-looking performance from the highlights I saw. It looked like a really slow-paced kind of game. Whether that was the team finding their legs again after doing all the flying around America, I don't know.
Maybe. I found it relatively entertaining, but then I didn't watch too many of the American games, so maybe I've been a bit starved of football and consequently was just lapping it up. I mean, it was a really odd game because we seemed to go ahead. Gabriel Martinelli seemingly put us 2-1 in front, and then within 60 seconds, I think the goal had been disallowed. and Lyon had gone ahead through Moussa Dembélé. So it was a bit of an odd... it wasn't clear entirely, I think, to everyone in the stadium exactly what had gone on there, that the first goal hadn't stood. But there were some positive things. Like I say, I think Joe Willock was the big positive for me. I thought Matteo Guendouzi was also pretty good, given that he's just come back to training. He looked pretty sharp in central midfield. And looking at those two, Guendouzi and Willock, they're very different players, but it struck me that in different ways they might be able to fill some of the void left by Aaron Ramsey. You know, Guendouzi in sort of deeper parts of the pitch and Willock more advanced. I know it's a big task for any young player, but they are presumably are part of that plan. And we've got a lot of options centrally now. In central midfield, you know, you think of Xhaka, Lucas Torreira is not back yet. Ceballos we've talked about as well. So there's a lot of competition in that part of the pitch.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be interesting to see what combinations Emery goes for. I mean, that's without mentioning Mesut Ozil, of course, as well.
Yeah, Henrik Mkhitaryan, Alex Iwobi as well, somebody who's going to come back from his holidays. I assume he's back this week. I think Torreira is back this week. I guess everybody should be back in full training at this point, some a little bit further behind than others. There are plenty of options for him there. I'm just trying to think, was there anything else from the Emirates Cup? I mean, Lacazette had a little bit of an injury, didn't he? So that was a slight worry, but he appears to be fine. He had a problem with the ankle before the game, I was told. And maybe it was just him saying, yeah, I'll give it a run, and then coming off to make sure nothing else happened.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's worth taking the precautions in pre-season, but it was worrying seeing him in that protective boot. But I've seen, I think, a clip of him training consequently. So what else was the stories out of the Emirates Cup? Sami Khedira was there in the crowd. There was a lot of noise about that, but I think he was just there as a guest of Mesut Ozil rather than a guest of Raul Sanjeti.
I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case.
Yeah, it would be a very strange signing, especially having just spoken about how congested we might well be in the middle of the pitch. Aubameyang looked sharp. He took his goal remarkably well. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw the clip. It was like, well, how? What? And then it was like, oh.
He almost didn't celebrate it. I kind of thought maybe it was an own goal, the way he just pointed at Mkhitaryan and was so chilled out about it. But the cross was absolutely... I mean, fizzed is understating it, really. It was fired at him and he turned it in very neatly. But defensively, I'll be honest, you know, we looked vulnerable, as we have for much of pre-season.
Yeah.
That's not an enormous surprise.
The two goals weren't particularly great. I mean, I think the first one is nearly worse than the second one. Maitland-Niles got done very easily. Out right back, and then you look at the two central defenders standing there watching Dembélé, and neither of them are marking him. He's free on his own in the box. I think really Callum Chambers is the one who should have been closer to him. Not great defensively. The second one, I know a lot of people have pointed fingers at Mustafi, but it looked to me from the clip that I saw that, you know, he might well have played them onside. It's still never a good look, though, when you're just running back with your arms in the air, because we've seen that one a little too often. And again, some people pointing fingers at Maitland-Niles for maybe playing them onside. But look, I think over the course of the tour, the thing, you know, the key thing is that we have been, it has been obvious that defensive recruitments are required. Again, we're going to save those questions for the second part of the show. Mesut Ozil and Seyed Kolasinac didn't take part in the Emirates Cup. Unai Emery said they weren't 100% ready after the ordeal that they went through, which has got to be really very frightening. I know everyone was going, wow, look at Kolasinac, what a beast, and all that kind of stuff. But when you're faced with that kind of a situation, it is something that can have quite a significant effect on you psychologically.
Definitely, definitely. And you would think the club would be supporting them through that with appropriate counselling and, you know, essentially victim support, because, you know, Kolasinac was extremely brave, but I think it's on instinct at that point. It's fight or fly, isn't it? And you can't anticipate what you might do in that kind of scenario, especially when there are, you know, other people. I think they had their partners with them, didn't they? So it's lots of people at risk of danger there. I mean, a really, really frightening incident. And, you know, I think I understand why the players have put a very brave and positive face on things publicly, but I hope they're getting the support they need behind the scenes, and I'm sure they will be from the club.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, I know that a lot of these people who carry out those attacks, you might call them cowards in a way because of the way they carry them out, that they blindside people and they rely on the fact that the element of surprise and also the shock will allow them to get away with what they get away with. So when confronted, I guess they weren't expecting that. I suppose the very fortunate thing is that nobody, or the guys, the people who were attacking Kolasinac and Ozil, didn't react aggressively themselves. Because, you know, had they been a bit more psycho or whatever, Kolasinac could have been in real trouble.
Yeah, he could. And, you know, there's been a lot of jokes about it. And the temptation in the way things are on social media is everything becomes a meme, right? Mm. But it's not really a laughing matter at all. And, I'm just very glad that they both were unharmed. And I think they're probably quite lucky in the circumstance.
So, look, we've got another game this week against Angers in France on Wednesday. And then on Sunday, we've got a game in Barcelona. So I wonder what the schedule is this week. Will we just day trip over to France and play that one and then back and day trip or do an overnight in Barcelona to play against Barcelona at the Camp Nou? I mean, it strikes me that we'll probably see something similar to the way the games are set up on the European or the US tour, rather, where there's a younger team picked for the game in France and then something approaching what would be Unai Emery's first pick for the Newcastle game playing against Barcelona. So we'll get an interesting look at what's to come from the two games that we've got this week.
Yeah, it will be really fascinating to see that Barcelona lineup, because I think you're right. That's a week, 7 days exactly before the Newcastle game. It's a good opportunity to put out something like his first team. And I think anyone who's sort of not ready to play that Barcelona game probably isn't going to be ready to play the Newcastle match. So some of these players who are later back, I think, probably won't quite make the cut for the start of the Premier League season. The guys have been at African Cup of Nations or Copa America potentially. But Angers, yeah, I think it'll be one of those sort of very mixed 11s, a bit of kids, fringe players, maybe a couple of senior professionals as well. But I think Barcelona is quite high profile friendly, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's a theoretical trophy at stake, I believe.
Yes, but I think, you know, if you're Emery and you're preparing for a new season, this is your last game. This is your last game to, you know, get the formation and the system right, personnel right. I mean, I think in the absence of any new signings, the back four that he picks against Barcelona will in all likelihood be the back four that he picks for the opening game at Newcastle.
That's a frightening thought.
It is a bit.
It is a bit. I mean, who knows? We might have a new signing by then to change things. But there's a real worry about the defence.
Okay.
I think as you say, there's questions, but we'll get on to those.
We will. I think we should. We'll take a break right here. We'll come back with your questions, most of which are about our defence, in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. You can do that by signing up at patreon.com/arsblog for just €5 a month. That is where we're going to start. I'm going to put the defensive questions just a little bit further in the distance. And this one comes from NC Gunnar, and he says, is it just me, or does the Pepe news make you worry that we're preparing to sell Aubameyang or Lacazette to pay for it? I know we aren't paying everything up front, etc., but it's still an awful lot of money. Do you, James, worry about either selling those two, or do you believe, perhaps, that there might be an injection of liquid cash through another sale?
I have to say, when I first saw the Pepe news, I did immediately think, I wonder if a striker's being sold, because, you know, you can imagine a team shape where you've kind of got 4-3-3, one centre forward, and you compensate for losing the other by ensuring you have goal scoring wide players. And Pepe, you know, is like Salah, like Mane, is in that mould. But, you know, I saw David Ornstein on Five Live saying he doesn't think either striker will be sold, that they're not going to compensate for it in that way. So I don't think they are going to know us to sell some more players, but it's very quiet again on the outgoing front, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think selling Aubameyang would be madness. I think you could possibly make a case for selling Lacazette if you bring in someone like Pepe. I'm not saying it's what I would do, but I think you could make a case for it. I don't think they will, but it did make me wonder if we are going to sell someone, if we've got some deals lined up for some outgoing players that might bring in and generate some cash. Because I know there's been a lot of talk about the transfer budget, and Vinay said, what is this 40 million? I don't recognize that number as being our transfer budget. But, you know, those numbers are based on estimates by the AST, also by Swiss Ramble, you know, who are not just plucking figures out of the air. You know, they're working with the public accounts that are available to them. You know, Arsenal's budget could be 40 million, it could be 50, it could potentially be 60, but we'll wait and see at the end of the window exactly how much we've spent and how much we've brought in. And I suspect it might well be something around that 40 million pound figure. So I have a sneaky feeling that they've got something lined up for somebody to go out. I don't know who it might be. Whether it's somebody big, whether it's a couple of fringe players, you know, Elneny could go, Who else could go? You know, Chambers potentially could go. He's one of those players who's who's been touted around as a potential make weight in a deal for Zaha, for example. Carl Jenkinson, I know you're not going to get massive money for those players, but it could be enough basically to pay the Pepe installment this year. And then every year, I think it's a smaller installment for the duration of the 5 years that we've signed him. So I don't think we can realistically sell either of the two strikers. I don't think we will sell either of the two strikers. But I would be surprised if, considering we're still looking at Kieran Tierney and we have this defensive issue hanging over us, I would be surprised if we signed Pepe and didn't sell at least two or three players.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is we can sell players abroad, can't we? Even after the British transfer deadline goes. And I do wonder if that might happen in one or two cases. I mean, the Koscielny thing's gone very quiet. We don't know quite what's happening there.
Yeah, we had a question on that actually from, let me see here, I have it here. I'm going to fire away with a couple of questions because I do have a defensive one. And this is from Raul Bartra, who's that? Bartra Raul or Batra Rahul. He says, I'm surprised the Koscielny situation was not given any coverage at the Q&A with Raul and Vinay. Surely the club captain revolting should have been addressed by the head of football.
I mean, I would be a little surprised, but I mean, look at those questions, fans, and I think the agenda there, perhaps understandably, was very driven by things around the kind of We Care, Do You movement and some of those broader fan concerns. But yes, it is interesting that it's sort of died down because this is the club captain who's playing no part in the first team in pre-season, who's effectively already got one foot out the door. He is going to leave abroad. So one would imagine that that gives him more time to do so, and it might rumble on a little bit until some kind of agreement is found. But you know, clearly he's going to go. I just feel like it's a real shame. You know, I thought that at the time. That was my first response. I think Arsenal really would have liked to keep Koscielny this summer if they could have done.
I do too.
Especially with the Saliba deal being the way it is. It seems to me that, you know, it wasn't... I think I would feel a lot better about the prospect of us not signing a centre-half if I thought Laurent Koscielny would be available for this season.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that was probably Arsenal's plan. I think it was maybe to use Koscielny and Sokratis to start the season. Mm-hmm. Then you have Rob Holding, who's going to come back. You know, Chambers and Mustafi then as your fourth and fifth choice options when those three are fit, and the fact that Holding could come back in and play alongside Sokratis means Koscielny could be rested a bit. So I think the Koscielny thing has put a real dent in our plans from a defensive point of view, and maybe pressed home the urgency of signing a defender this summer. So I'll go to the question that I did have about this transfer window, and it's all the way up here. Why is it always the last one? This comes from Cam, who says, he's at Cameron Sadler, who says, despite signing Pepe, attacker, Saliba, still a year away, and Ceballos, temporary, which is certainly a good window for us relative to recent years, wouldn't you agree that this window is a failure if we don't secure what we need most, which is a competent, immediately available centre-back?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think one of the things that's happening here is that Unai Emery is looking at compressing his formation from going to three centre-halves to two.
Right.
And I think he's got an enormous amount of centre-halves for ideally two positions.
Does he, though?
You know, well, I think so.
So he's got Sokratis, he's got Holding, he's got Chambers, and he's got Mavropanos. Mavropanos is injured and can't play and needs some development time. So he's got Holding, Sokratis, Chambers, and Mustafi. Those are the four. Is that a huge amount?
He's got those four.
We did go into a season before with only three, if I remember correctly. Didn't we go into a season went Vermaelen, Mertesacker, Koscielny, and Nacho Monreal was viewed as like the fourth choice centre half. That was only a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. There are four in your list, but you know, I think Nacho Monreal at a push can play. Technically, Koscielny is still on the books. And then you have got three young players in Mavropanos, Medley and Bielik. And, you know, their futures are sort of to be determined in the immediate term. But for me, the issue is not quantity, it's quality. And I do wonder if they feel a bit like they have to move some out, or at least have some guarantee that they're going to move some out. I mean, presumably the reported decision to sell Christian Bielik is in part informed by we've got a lot of centre-backs for two slots. But I've forgotten what the original question was. Is it a good summer transfer window?
Well, no. The question was, would it be a failure?
I don't think so. Because as much as we need a centre-half, we have definitely required reinforcements in other areas. I think particularly a wide player. When you go back to the January transfer window and the players we were linked with, people like Perisic, Carrasco, I think Unai Emery really wanted a wide player who could dribble and who could be a goal threat. And it looks like he's going to get that. I would desperately love us to add a centre-half to that, but maybe they just can't find somebody. Is that credible?
I mean, if you were to ask me right now, like, who should we go and sign? I don't really know myself, but then I'm not a highly paid scout, well-versed in every league in European football, whose job is to specifically identify players from my own football club to bring in.
Of course.
I think when you look at the situation that we have with some of these players, you know, there are circumstantial situations that we have to look at as well. So Holding looked very sharp in training on the US tour, but from what I'm told, that he's earmarking after the first international break for his comeback. And then we kind of have to be a little bit sensible with him, right? So we can't just sort of throw him in and expect him to play three games a week. I don't think that's possible. Chambers, potentially okay alongside Mustafi, but you know, I have some concerns. Mustafi's situation seems to me to be a very difficult one, because there is almost zero faith in him among fans, and that's being reflected in the reception that he's getting, which I think is not helpful. But I don't think the club can be blind to that either. You know, they can't ignore that, you know, this is happening. And it's very difficult for a player. Go on.
I was just going to say, nor can they sell a player if no one wants to buy them. So, you know, what can you do to a certain extent?
That's true. So I think for me, while I, you know, look at the signings that we've made, I think Ceballos is smart. As I've said, if we bring in Pepe, that's a fantastic signing and one we should all be excited about. But if the only significant change in our central defensive lineup this summer is that Lauren Koscielny is gone and Callum Chambers has come back from loan on Fulham, I think that would be a failure to address what is just as key an issue to this team and this transfer window as bringing in the wide player. For me, anyway.
Well, we've got worse if that's what happens.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, what about the idea? What about the idea that if you are a more attacking team, a team that spends more time in the opposition half, that causes greater threat to the opposition, that takes more shots, that has more dribbles, that gets into the box more often, that by doing that, you take some of the weight off the defense. Is that a reasonable way of trying to rationalize not bringing in a central defender? I mean, I can't believe that they're not trying. I genuinely can't believe that they're just saying, well, we'll wait for Saliba for a year, and Rob Holding will be another year developed, and Socrates can be the elder statesman, whatever. You know, I can't believe that that's the case. They have to be out there looking for a centre half. But in the absence of it, is there anything positive that we can take from the fact that we're looking, as it stands, to really improve the attacking side of our team?
I think there has to be. I mean, my inference from watching all this is that, and maybe this is not correct, but it feels a bit like Unai Emery kind of looks at this team and thinks, you know, he couldn't solve that defensive problem in the entire course of last season. And I think that he maybe recognises that, you know, him constantly tinkering with that and trying to get that right didn't really make us any better. And maybe he just thinks, well, look, if I put out a team that has enough of attacking firepower and looks to control games and be protagonists, to borrow his own word, then that might be the best form of defence for us. But I think we definitely need to try and do something between now and the end of the window. You know, I have seen a couple of whispers about potentially a loan signing. I wonder if there might be some legs in that, simply because A, I don't know where we're going to get any more transfer funds from, and B, given that we have young defenders like Holding, like Chambers, like Mavropanos, you know, maybe they would want those to be the guys to take us forward in the future. Saliba coming in next year, let's not forget. But someone who could kind of be a stopgap this season if Koscielny goes, I think is a necessity, really.
Yeah. Like, you know, if...
I think we're going to be talking about it all season otherwise, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, we're certainly going to be talking about it until something happens. When is the transfer deadline? Is it next Thursday?
Friday? Thursday or Friday, yeah. I think it's the 9th, the Friday.
Right, okay. And is it like a 5 p.m. or an 11
p.m.? Actually, maybe it's... No, maybe the season kicks off on a Friday night.
I have Sky Sports here telling me Thursday, August. I'm doing the Danny Ceballos. Danny Ceballos. August the 8th until 5 p.m. That's
5 p.m.
I think. Yeah.
Well, I'll be there at 4 p.m. biting my fingernails, hoping a defender arrives.
So we can still sell to leagues where the window remains open. So it's possible that we could bring players in and have a heavy squad and still sell some of them. It's not an ideal situation to be in, though, because when everyone knows you've got to shift some players, your bargaining power goes down. But that's just the reality of the market that the Premier League have created now because of the way they've set up the transfer deadline. So we have, what, basically 10 days to find a central defender or a way of improving the centre of our defence.
It's quite... Yeah, I'm not particularly optimistic about that, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
But what do you think? Is it a failure, the window, if we don't do that?
I don't think the overall window would be a failure, but I think not addressing that issue would be a real failure. You know, we've conceded 102 Premier League goals in 2 years. It's the same personnel. We brought in Socrates last season. It didn't really make a great deal of difference. Perhaps there are things structurally, tactically, organisationally that Unai Emery can do with his team this season, which might take some of the heat off our defence. You know, with maybe a three-man midfield and one sitting deep or somebody like, if we can keep the ball more. I mean, the thing about it is, though, we don't need... We're the kind of team that's quite easy to expose defensively. It can often be just one ball over the top that makes us look terrible defensively. So it's not as if, you know, having lots of the ball will immediately wipe out the threat of the opposition. All they need to do is, like, sit deep, we push up, they play a ball over the top, we look for an offside that's not there, and away we go, you know. So maybe there's ways of doing it, but I think unless we strengthen the defence, we're still going to have this flaw within our team that will not allow us to reach our attacking potential. I think the best attacking teams do have some measure of a solid platform defensively. And I don't think we have that with the players that we have right now. So.
No, certainly not. But I suppose sometimes I think about what a good team would be, and I think about, you know, winning titles and winning major championships. But then when I look at this season, all we need to do, really, our aim is to get back into the Champions League. And do I think that by having an attack of, say, Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe, we could have enough firepower to be in that top four, if not particularly near top spot? I think probably on balance, we might well be able to. Given how close we got last year. But yeah, I'd rather see us with a more secure defence too. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Let's have this question. In fact, it's two questions, really. The first one from Discord is from Ivanson. And the question goes, is Pepe's potential arrival changing how you feel about Mislintat leaving? This transfer seems to be primarily about the agent connections, which Mislintat was against. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a better or worse approach? And there was another question from Ollie on the Discord, which said, if we get Pepe, how do you feel about the reported 9 million agents fee? Row linking to Schmooze is one thing, but I'm not sure how I feel about what is effectively a bribe. Just be interested to get your point on how this makes you feel about Raul and his approach and Sven, potentially.
Is the 9 million part of the 70 million? Or is it separate from that? Well, I don't quite know.
It sounds like it's separate. And based on the reports from Italy, Arsenal's willingness to meet the agent's demands has been a factor in the players' camp's decision.
And the agent is George Mendes.
I'm not sure. No.
Is it?
Not the player's agent. I don't believe so. I believe that George Mendes has been hired as an intermediary to...
Okay.
To act on behalf of Arsenal. That's my... What I was told is that he had a mandate to do the deal. He was not the player's agent.
Right, so we got another agent to act as an agent for us to deal with Nicolas Pepe's agent.
Essentially, yes.
Right.
In as far as I understand it...
It feels a bit murky, but is it the reality of how you get deals done? Like, maybe that's just what you have to do these days. I mean, it would be great to think that it was just the draw of Arsenal. You know, he really wants to play at the Emirates. He really, really wants to play Europa League football next season. Are those the things that convince a player to sign for a club? I think the other thing as well is that, like, whatever we say about the agent fee, ultimately the decision about where the player goes is down to the player himself, right? So if he fancied playing for Napoli in the Champions League next season, what we offered his agent shouldn't really be the main consideration. Unless this agent is some kind of Svengali type figure who is dictating every move, and I guess that's not beyond the realms of possibility, you know. So
yeah, well,
I don't know how to think about it. It's not great, but it's the reality of how the market works and how you get deals done. Does it change the way I feel about Mislintat and Raul? I don't know. Let's see where we are. I mean, there's a lot to be said for an approach to recruitment that highlights the best of both worlds, if you like. Like, you do need personal connections. You do need people who know people to make things happen. So I think there's two kind of separate strands. And this is where I think when we heard about Mislintat and Raul and Ivan Gazidis last year, this was our thinking, was that Mislintat was going to identify the talent. That was his key area of expertise, right? He could spot these young players. He could work on the deals to a certain extent. And when we needed to get them over the line, Raul was the guy who was going to do it, because that's what he did at Barcelona. He, you know, brokered that crazy Neymar deal. you know, and you have to deal. The reality is you have to deal with agents. So, yeah, maybe that's what we're seeing here, in that the identification of Pepe as a talent, you know, isn't necessarily something that you have to, you know, be a Sven Mislintat to see, but the ability to get the deal done is maybe not something Mislintat could do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's, I think, fair. And I also think if you look at the players we're signing this summer, or certainly have been linked with, if you were told that Sven Mislintat had identified them or signed them off, you know, Pepe, Martinelli, Ceballos, Tierney, they are kind of young up-and-comers. You wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, well, this is an anti-Mislintat policy that we're enacting here. You know, these are guys with big upsides and big potential. I think it is a little bit of vindication for Raul in terms of pulling strings and getting things done. And it's, yes, a bit unpleasant that a lot of that money goes out of the game and into agents' pockets. But if you want to deal at this level, that is the way it works. And, you know, just to touch on the Mendes thing, I mean, that's pretty common. There are two ways that agents make money, and one is by having a client list, and the other is by effectively acting as brokers, people who are sort of granted contractual permission to do deals off of clubs. Mm. And very, very often that will mean that you won't actually be the player's agent, and it'll mean that the club might have to pay commission twice. I mean, let me tell you, if George Mendes has done this deal for Arsenal, they'll be paying him a pretty penny too, never mind Nicolas Pepe's agents. Yeah. So I'm sure it will be expensive on that front, and I'm sure that will all come out in the wash, but they have, it seems, got the agreement of the player and landed the target. So, you know, if Raul's job is to get these deals over the line, in this instance, it would appear he's done it. And let's just hope he can do the remainder of what's left to do in this window.
Yeah, I mean, there is the Arsenal often, I think they have to, don't they? Clubs have to release how much they pay to agents. So I actually found this story here. Arsenal last year for last season, we paid something in the region of 11,181,000 to agents. In comparison, Everton paid 19 million, Chelsea played 20, nearly 27 million. Liverpool, as we talk about Liverpool's recruitment as something that we should try and use as a blueprint, right? Liverpool paid nearly £44 million in agents' fees. So that could include the deals for Alisson. It could include the deal for Van Dijk. You know, the other players that they've brought in who've been so effective, who helped them win a Champions League. The reality is that when you make deals in the ballpark of £70 million, it's going to smash our transfer record. You're going to pay a chunk in agents' fees as well, or you don't get the deal done.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, the transfer fee for Pepe is pretty absurd, let alone the agents' fee, but that is just the market that we're operating in. And the way it's going, you'd have to think he's got a good chance of retaining that value. So in that respect, you know, I think it is probably a more sensible investment than the Zaha one.
Mm. Okay, whose question is it? Is it my question? I think it is. This one actually comes from Facebook. It's from Jude Sebastian. He says, Saint-Étienne bought Pepe for 9 million. They didn't. It was Lille who bought Pepe for 9 million from Angers in 2017. Now they're possibly selling for 70 million. Why are we not trying to grab players at a more modest price levels and aiming to move them on for large profits?
Well, I'm sure we're trying. I'm sure we're trying. And I think, you know, signings like Guendouzi, Martinelli, you know, to a slightly lesser extent, Lucas Torreira, are indications of players who we have recruited at a good age for a good price who could be sold for profit. And I also think our academy, we've talked about this before, but could prove to be a significant resource for us in that respect. I mean, I don't know what you made of the story this week about Xavier Michi leaving the club, but, you know, I know he was a very well thought of prospect, but it sounds like we got a decent fee, a few million quid for him, and a significant sell-on within that. So, you know, and that will be profit on nothing, essentially. So that could be a way of us recouping some cash. I would love it. It's funny, you know, Arsenal probably the only club where this is the case because we're such bad sellers historically. But if we could sell off a few fringe players that we don't really need in this window for healthy fees, I would love that. I would love to see it.
Yeah, I think we all would.
I'm thinking Elneny or maybe a Callum Chambers, say, you know, if we could get like return on our investment for those guys, that would be tremendous. We're just so bad at doing
it. Well, I mean, we can't sell Callum Chambers as it stands unless we bring in a central defender.
No.
There's no way we can sell Callum Chambers, but certainly Elneny, certainly Jenkinson. And, you know, we see who else might be considered surplus to requirements. The other thing to make the point on here is that the player's readiness is part of why a club will buy them. So maybe Arsenal didn't spend 9 million on Nicolas Pepe in whenever it was that he joined. When did he join Angers? 2013. So, you know, they bought him, where did he go, from Lille, 2017. So, you know, readiness is an issue here. Is he ready to play at the level that the club needs him to play at? So, you know, yeah, that's part of it, I think. And just identifying the talents. And I suppose as well, if you're just buying players with the idea of selling them, I think your strategy has to be a little bit different. You've got to be buying players to get into your team, not necessarily as for their asset value, you know? So,
yeah, that's very true. This question comes from 321 on Discord, and they ask, what's going on at left back? Given how many bids we've made to Celtic for Tierney, that position is presumably a priority. But if the Tierney bid is in fact off, are we targeting another left back, or have we been forced to move that money to deal with the Koscielny move? Do you think our need for a centre back could make left back less of a priority?
I mean, they seem to really want Tierney, don't they? I mean, it was reported last week that the thing was dead, and then it was reported, no, it's not dead. They're still after him. They're confident, you know, of getting a deal done. But they've been confident for a few weeks now. It seems to me that they're prioritising Tierney over any other left-back on their list. That's for sure.
For sure.
So, I mean, beyond what's being reported in the newspapers, I don't have any real idea. The other thing about Tierney is I don't think even if he arrived tomorrow, he's fit to play at the start of the season, is he? Or is he?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I
mean, there's been like over a operation.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe that's part of it. Maybe they don't need to be in a hurry to finalise the Tierney deal because they know that he's not going to start. He's not going to start the season. So, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that the Koscielny thing has happened has only highlighted our need for a centre half anyway. And if they were, you know, if they were already targeting a left back, I don't see why it would have any impact on that. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that is an area where we might make one of these sales we're talking about. You know, if we were to get Kieran Tierney, I can't see the necessity for having Tierney, Kolasinac and Monreal in the squad next season. And Zach Medley, who's, you know, can play a little bit of left-back potentially as backup. So maybe there could be a sale there. I feel like Kolasinac is one of the few assets we have that we could actually get a good chunk of money for.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Here's a question from Nick, who's at Real Nick Morgan. And he says, Iwobi went on record saying he would look to leave the club if he didn't get enough playing time. And just to put those quotes in context, he said, like any player, if he wasn't playing, he'd have to go because he wants to play. However, he did say, you know, this was around the time we were looking at Zaha, that the arrival of Zaha, you know, wouldn't frighten him and he'd be willing to fight for his place. So let's give him that. But he says, with this impending Pepe signing, should we cash in on Iwobi and let Saka, Nelson, or Mkhitaryan take up the backup wing spots or deploy him more centrally?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think there is a bit of congestion potentially when Pepe arrives in these wide areas now. And I can't quite work out what we're going to do with everybody. I mean, to be honest, when I look at the list of players, the one who to me just seems absolutely surplus to requirements is Henrik Mkhitaryan. You know, especially as if Pepe is going to play predominantly from the right-hand side, I just don't really see the need for Mkhitaryan in the squad. But we all know there are sort of fiscal reasons that it might prove difficult to move him on. But he would be the one that I would probably cut the tie with first. But I do wonder if this is going to impact on some of the younger players. You know, if Pepe's arrival means Reece Nelson or, you know, someone like that, Saka might be sent on loan because their opportunities might be a bit limited. I think I've already said I think Smith Rowe will definitely go on loan almost regardless. I wouldn't sell Iwobi just yet. I mean, he's under contract for another 4 years, I think, something like that. He signed a big long-term deal, didn't he, a year ago. His values shouldn't drop anytime particularly soon. And I think he has attributes that do make him a useful squad player. But if it gets to next year and you find that he's not integral, you know, I think something we have to get better at as a club is cutting ties and making sales when it's required. I'm just not necessarily sure we're quite at that point in his case. What do you think?
Yeah, if we are planning on playing Pepe from the right, it still leaves a bit of a gap on that left-hand side, doesn't it?
That's true, yeah.
Which is true.
I mean, I'm sort of working on a bit of an assumption that Aubameyang might play from the left a bit.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah. But, if he doesn't, I think, obviously, Mkhitaryan's an option, but then I think Iwobi is really prominent in Unai Emery's thoughts. You know, he was for most of last season, and there's no obvious reason why that should change.
Yeah. I think the arrival of Ceballos has maybe put pay to the idea that moving centrally, which I thought perhaps might be the case because he does seem a bit more naturally suited to that. And like you say, there is a bit of congestion in there, but there's also Reece Nelson. There's also Saka, you know, who was impressive on the tour as well. So maybe it's just a big squad trying to foster a competitive environment. But I wouldn't yet sell Iwobi. Like, if you were to ask me between Mkhitaryan and Iwobi who I'd prefer to sell, it would be Mkhitaryan, for sure. Hmm. But again, wages could well be an issue there.
Yeah, and I also think the likes of Nelson, Saka, I just think it's a little bit soon to kind of take Iwobi out of the picture and give those guys their head. I mean, I think they're obviously really promising, but I think they would be served by another year, you know, with Iwobi in front of them. And then if they develop accordingly, then maybe you do consider selling him. But he wouldn't be the guy I would let go this summer.
No. Okay. I think it's your question.
It's my question. I should have had one lined up in that case.
You should have been.
Elena Colburn at True Blood Gunner says, do you think Pepe is finally the real Alexis Sanchez replacement? He seems to do a lot of the same things. He's a dribbler, a creator, and a goal scorer who might lose the ball quite a bit. And then they go on to ask, what would your starting 11 be with our current squad and Pepe? I don't think we're going to do that one yet. Before we can't get into the preferred starting 11 shit yet, can we?
Not yet. No, we can't because, you know, we haven't signed Pepe yet. So, you know, your instinct, of course, is at the start of the season, you've got to put him in the team, but he hasn't signed yet. And if we put him in a starting 11 on a podcast, it will absolutely jinx the deal, which is going to happen any second after we've finished recording, of course. Is he an Alexis Sanchez replacement? Possibly. I don't know that, you know, this idea that we always have to replace somebody. It sort of overlooks the fact that even with those players, we were still iffy at times. Like, you know, the way people say, if only we had another Santi Cazorla. Of course, Santi Cazorla is an amazing footballer and a great guy, but it wasn't as if when we had Santi Cazorla, we were winning the league.
World beaters.
You know, and same with Alexis. He really dominated in a team which probably had a quality gap. at centre forward, you know? So maybe the reason Alexis was so good is because Giroud wasn't quite at the level we wanted him to be. So I don't know about him being an Alexis replacement, but he would certainly bring things to this team that we need.
Well, I think that's it. I think, you know, the comparison to Alexis, I'm not necessarily sure they are that similar, but I think when Alexis left, and certain other players left around that time too, who lost certain attributes from our first team squad, and I think pace on the flanks, dribbling with the ball, goal-scoring threat from wide positions, those are things that we have really missed. And on paper, he replaces that. You know, I mean, it's impossible to know how he'll settle. I think he's probably a bigger prospect with a higher ceiling than Wilfried Zaha. But because he's playing in a different league, I think there is that element of risk and not quite knowing how it's going to pan out.
But
look, there's a real history of, for the most part, players moving from Ligue 1 to Arsenal have done okay. I mean, you know, we did sign an Ivorian winger from Lille a few years ago. That didn't pan out too great. But yeah. I'm trying to not invoke the spirit of Gervinho, essentially.
Exactly. Just because we did the exact same thing a few years ago doesn't mean it will have the exact same outcome. Right?
That's Arsenal all right. over for you. That's
right. right. Tell
That's
me.
The Arsenal motto.
Yeah, okay. Here's one from Mean Lean at Arsenal Vision. And he says, assuming this Pepe deal goes ahead, we'll have quite a number of attacking options to choose from, which is quite exciting. But my question to you guys is, how much of a say do you think Edu has in regards to our playing style?
Well, interesting question. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Raul made very plain, didn't he, that Edu is not to be held accountable for this summer's transfer activity. He couldn't have been more clear about that. And I think that was the right thing to do. And I guess absolutely inevitable, really, given that Raul said we had a plan dating back to the spring and Edu was very much occupied with Brazil at that point. In terms of our playing style, well, I don't think he'll have much say at this point. I think it will take him about 6 months to really get his feet under the desk. He's got very big feet, presumably, or a very small desk. It's a difficult thing to do, essentially. But I can't imagine he sits down on day one with Unai Emery and says, just so you know, Unai, this is the formation you've got to play and this is the style you've got to play it with. I think it will be more of a kind of process of evolution where they'll have conversations about style and Edu will arrive at his sort of philosophy rather than just trying to implement it from day one. I think it's more something that when Unai Emery is evaluated, maybe towards the end of the forthcoming season, by that stage, I think Edu's say and his kind of technical philosophy will be one of the factors Emery is evaluated against. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I think that's very fair as well. I don't think Edu can go to Unai Emery and say, you must play like this. I don't think he can do that with a manager who's established and in the job and everything else. What he might be able to say is, we want Arsenal to play exciting, attractive, attacking football. How you do that, that's up to you as the coach, but that's kind of what we want to be our philosophy or our brand or whatever else. I think the other thing is that Edu's influence over our playing style might well come via the transfer market as well. You're right, Sanye. He said that he doesn't, you know, none of this window can be put on him. And in fairness to Sanye, that means that as head of football, he's taken that responsibility on himself. So whatever happens this window, it's on Raul Sanye. That's basically what he made clear. It's the same way that when Josh Kroenke came out and said, when I speak on behalf of my father. It basically means that we're never going to hear from Stan and everything is going to come from Josh. But I think as they discuss what the team needs and what the squad needs and they target recruitment based on that, the kind of players that he brings in will inform the playing style or will help enable the kind of playing style that they want. So I think it's much, like you say, it's much more of a process than Edu sitting down and saying, right, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. You go ahead and do that. I don't think it works that way.
No, nor do I. And I think that wouldn't be particularly productive. I think it's something that we'll only really see come into play, as I say, when they look at whether or not they're going to keep Unai on. But in terms of how he determines our style, I mean, you know, the style that he, from what I understand from his time at Corinthians, it wasn't all about free-flowing football. You know, it was quite structured football that he and Tite, the coach there, worked on. So if you look at Edu's history, and to an extent he's implemented that with the Brazilian national team too, he hasn't personally been a guy who's been like, oh, we're going to play, you know, Wenger ball or anything necessarily like it. So it will be interesting to see if that carries through into his work at Arsenal, or if he does try and sort of, you know, embrace some of the values and the philosophy of the club that he played for. It'll be, a very, very interesting process to watch unfold.
Okay, a couple of very quick ones to finish then. This one comes from Niranjan R. Kulkarni, who's at opinion_of_nice. And he says, so Aubameyang's signing video is by far my favourite signing video of football transfers. Which signing videos do you like so far? I know Andrew doesn't normally like that type of stuff, but still.
I actually quite liked Saliba's one the other day with the little clip of Raul Senyehi dancing in the background. Right. Did you see that?
I didn't. I missed that in my fuzzy haze of North America.
Right, fair enough. It's on Saliba's Instagram channel. It's not even an official club thing. It's his own personal brand, and I think it's just a quirk of the way it's shot, but at one point it does look like Raul Senyehi, he's doing a sort of body popping move in the background,
right?
So that's up there. I mean, I like you, I share a bit of disdain for these things.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that I do like is when, you know, the one where the American Special Forces invade Saddam Hussein's palace and they all get captured and they have to send in Topper Harley. Oh no, hang on, that's Hot Shots Part 2, sorry. Missed that one.
I mean, on reflection, I quite like the Alexis Sanchez piano playing one for Manchester United.
Oh, that was good.
I just think that's so funny now, given what a tremendous flop he's turned out to be.
Okay, final one, because we got to go and you have things to do and you are in Edinburgh. And of course...
Oh, quick note on that, by the way.
Well,
I don't know if you saw this, but... there was a thing doing the rounds on Twitter about Arsenal were trying to hire someone who can fly a drone for Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
To do like an aerial shot of the Emirates Stadium. And there's a lot of it's like a job placement somewhere. And there's a lot of speculation that that could be for a potential Nicolas Pepe signing video.
Right.
So look out for that.
Okay. All right. Well, that has got absolutely nothing to do with this question whatsoever, but it to do with the videos, of course. I was my brain isn't working. It's working in a very linear fashion at the moment. So when you said on this, I thought you meant the next question I was going to ask, and I couldn't figure out any connection to it. I don't know how you could have known. Well, I said you were in Edinburgh, and then you went, oh, on this, and I thought you might have said something. But Aaron Ward-Sell, who's at Aaron WS, says, if I go to see James Fringe show wearing an Arsenal scarf, will he do the Magpie Facts song as an encore?
It's difficult to find a place for it within the show, but if you do wear an Arsenal scarf, I will definitely sing you the Magpie jingle. I'll find you after the gig and sing you the Magpie jingle.
Oh, wow.
In a private one-to-one setting, which I think is even more valuable. I mean, I've just said that. I'm going to go out for my first show on Wednesday and it's going to be a bunch of people in Arsenal scarves.
Who you're going to have to do. You're going to have to do a magpie lap dance for each one of them individually.
Oh, my. Yes, I may have opened the floodgates there a little bit. But, if you do want a cup, can I plug myself?
Of course you can.
As I always say, can I plug myself? And my show is at the Pleasance Courtyard at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and it's at 4:15 p.m. every day, and it's called James McNicholas the Boxer, and it's about my granddad, who was a boxer, and how different he and I are. And if you're around, if you're going to be in Edinburgh, definitely come along and definitely say hi to me afterwards and make me lap dance and sing the Magpie song.
Okay, where do people get the tickets? There's a Edinburgh Fringe Festival website, I guess.
is, or you can go to pleasants.co.uk and I get fractionally more of the cut, like 2% more.
Okay, well, good. Well, go along. If you are in Edinburgh, go along and see that and get yourself a Magpie Facts lap dance. That's going to be that. People have been asking, where, you know, why did you stop the Magpie Facts? The reality is that Magpie Facts are now going to a brand new subscription website called The Magthletic, and you're going to have to pay £4 a month.
Some Magpie news, guys.
Yeah. Some serious Magpie
news. The Magpies are going behind a paywall.
But all right. Well, look, we will talk to you next week, of course, on the Arscast Extra. Hopefully, between now and then, we'll have signed Nicolas Pepe, and hopefully we'll have signed a central defender. Whatever happens, we'll cover it on the Arscast on Friday. Don't forget, there is an extra Arscast out today, that Danny Ceballos special, so you can go and listen to that. For now, though, we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.